KBOO 90.7 for being on the airways. Hey, what a wonderful opportunity.
Yes, yes. You know, my slogan with Jay, and it's always been ever since I've been down here, that at KBOO, everyone has a voice.
Yes.
And that's community radio. Everybody get a voice to talk about, sing about, explain things that they want to explain about life. Yeah. So you've been tuned to... this is 30 minutes. That's what it is. It's 30 minutes of local Christian artists. And you know what? You can email me at ducerecords@yahoo.com if you have any comments, anything. So we're going to close it up, Brother David. And hopefully you'll come back when you get some more material.
Yes, I will. I'll be a pleasure.
All right. This is Charles. I'm going to sign out here. Again, thanks for joining us, and I hope we have made a difference in your morning. And enjoy the rest of your day. God bless you, and keep the faith.
On 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Rev up your support for KBOO Community Radio. Have an old car taking up space? Donate it to KBOO. Your unused vehicle can become music to our ears, powering independent radio that amplifies diverse voices and community perspectives. It's easy and hassle-free. Either visit kboo.fm/cars or call 1-877-KBOO-123. You'll get a tax deduction and the satisfaction of supporting local independent media. Donate your car to KBOO Community Radio today and drive change in your community.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. These days, we are collectively experiencing a crisis of meaning. Who hasn't felt that? We may feel profoundly mismatched with our modern-day reality. But how did we get here? And how do we begin to sift through the excess of ideas to find a life of meaning? Well, today we're talking about how to create a sustainable meaning system to finally feel aligned with our world. Our guest today is Mark Hawkins, PhD, author of the book, The Mismatched Human, Our Fight for a Meaningful Existence. Mark is an author, educator, and clinical counselor. His first book, The Power of Boredom, Why Boredom is Essential for Creating a Meaningful Life, was featured in the New York Times and the Daily Telegraph. Dr. Hawkins has a Master of Counseling from City University of Seattle and a Doctorate in Philosophy of Education from Simon Fraser University. He has over 20 years of experience working with the public as an educator and counselor for children, youth, and adults. His research focuses on interdisciplinary understandings of meaning and purpose as they relate to human well-being. What a topical topic. I'm just so happy we're talking about this. And hello, Mark, and welcome to the Pathway Show.
Hi, Paulo. Thanks for having me on.
Give us a little background. What led you to produce this fascinating book?
You know, I think for a long time, at least the past 20 years, I've really been interested in, you know, meaning and purpose, my own meaning and purpose, existential philosophy, you know, the books of Viktor Frankl. And also I've been interested in ideas like evolutionary psychology and what that means for, you know, human happiness in our world today. And so this book is kind of like a melding of those two things. It's the existential philosophy of meaning and purpose and how humans need that to be happy in our world, but also this part of us, you know, that kind of grew up in the hunter-gatherer era, the paleo era, and what that means. What does evolutionary psychology mean for our search for meaning and purpose in our world today?
So the title of your book is The Mismatched Human. And how did we become mismatched with a world that we have largely created?
Well, I mean, I think it starts back in the Paleolithic era, again, the evolutionary psychology. So, I mean, it's my sort of argument in this book that there is sort of a baseline of human existence that we evolved for, you know, thousands, if not millions of years to live as hunter-gatherers. And for lack of a better sort of explanation, part of us is sort of like animal in nature. You know, we have that reptilian brain that is driven to seek instant gratification of our desires. And that's a survival mechanism. Like if you look around, pretty much all animals or all beings on our planet do that to some degree and in their own way. But then we are also conscious of this. We are conscious of the fact that we're doing this. And so this is one sort of mismatch that I talk about, is the fact that we have these animal drives, but then we also are able to think about these animal drives, which complicates the whole matter.
Right.
And another part of it is that we evolved to sort of live, both of these sides are kind of best matched to be living in that Paleolithic era. You know, back then, our drive for the pleasure, our drive for the instant gratification was what we needed. Right. But today, if we do that, we are in trouble. You know, we make ourselves sick. We make ourselves, you know, we have destruction. Right. And another aspect of it that's mismatched is that this very sort of survival drive also was matched in the natural world. You know, we looked around our environment back then and we saw animals doing the same thing. They were hunting and they were having these same sort of instincts. And so our sort of physical need to have that survival drive matched a sort of metaphysical story that was going on around us. And of course, today it's totally mismatched. Our drive is our drive for survival is actually like bad for us in many ways, right? And then our spiritual world doesn't match that natural world anymore either.
You know, I think most people don't really have a, an active awareness of the fact that, you know, Homo as a species has been around for a million years, and Homo sapiens has been around for probably 300,000 years. And so the way what we're dealing with now as of the Neolithic revolution, the agricultural revolution, which is only 7,000 or 8,000 years old, is like such a flash in the pan compared to the history of our species, and our brains haven't really changed that much. Do you think that's a fair statement?
I mean, definitely. And that's kind of the main like thrust of the book and these ideas, is that we were matched psychologically and physically for that Paleolithic time. And after the agricultural revolution, as you said, like that's only about 7,000 years ago. And so even if we were adapt to our sort of new environment, it would take thousands and thousands of years to probably get to a place where we matched our society now.
Right. Now, what is, you talk in the book about the symbolic world, and what is that? And how is that such a big part of our lives?
Well, the symbolic world is like, again, for lack of a better explanation, because I know you can't really separate our animal side and our symbolic side, as I name them, because they're one and the same thing. But for ease of talking about it, we have the animal side, which is our basic survival instincts, like all of the other animals. But then our symbolic side is this ability to think about ourselves, to think about that struggle to survival, to think about the future, to invent things that don't exist in the immediate present, right? So we can invent our visions of the future. We can think about the past. We create things out of our minds that become reality. And that is the symbolic world. It's our ability to think about ourselves.
And that's what we do to compensate for the fact that we're no longer in survival mode. You know, I read something somewhere about the brain and the evolution of the brain and how, you know, you've got the lizard brain and then you've got the mammalian brain and then you've got the neocortex, you know, getting larger and larger, and how this is the way we have evolved. And it's not like a very intelligent design. I mean, if it was like software, you know, we get to a point with software, it kind of gets more fragmented and more inefficient. And we discover bugs in the system. We get to a point where we have to make a decision whether to just scrap it and start over based on what we've learned. But evolution doesn't work like that. It just keeps building on top of itself. And I think this accounts for a lot of the conflict that we have within ourselves, because the animal part is still very active and it asserts itself, but it's not necessarily in alignment with what's best for us in this world where we don't have to indulge in instant gratification in order to survive. Do you think that makes sense?
Yeah, I know that's exactly it. You know, we can't, even as much as we want to, we can't get rid of some of those, you know, desires that we have, right? Because that's actually still what's keeping us alive. And like you said, it's kind of, you know, you want to get rid of some of that old programming. And like, that's exactly it. We're mismatched now, right? It's a paradox. We have this survival instinct that is used to be great for us. It was necessary, but now it's, you know, it's questionable whether it's doing us harm or good. But, you know, that's the thing. That's our condition, right? Is that we have both. We cannot get rid of them. We have to manage them, right? We have to manage both sides of that.
You mentioned the word paradox. Let's talk about what you refer to as the existential paradox. How would you define that?
Yeah, so I think there's a few different possible definitions. I think the one is what we've been talking about, our ability to think about ourselves and to think that we're some sort of supreme being, right? Because we can think about different worlds and we can think about God and different levels of existence. But then also there's a side where we're still driven by this, what you want to call carnal sort of drive for survival. So that's one paradox. And the other paradox is that because we can imagine these amazing worlds, we can imagine a state of like perfect bliss and harmony and tranquility, but yet we can never get there, right? We can never actually get to that perfect spot, at least, you know, so far and in this life, right?
We die and go to heaven, right?
Yes. If that's the belief you go by, then that is like, yeah, that's what you're heading towards, right? And yeah, so that's one paradox. We can imagine one thing, but it's achieving that is almost impossible, right?
Yeah. So you talk about, and I'm going to quote your book, living in the world today requires mindfulness of being. However, we can't do this without a myth that will infuse our struggle with meaning and significance. Infusing our struggle with meaning and significance. And what would such a new myth? Let's talk about myths. So how did myths get started? Were they around during the hunter-gatherer times? I would imagine there was the goddess of creativity and there was the god of fire or whatever. But what's the history of mythology and why is it not working for us now?
Well, I think if we go back again to the Paleolithic, you know, again, like we had that survival instinct, but because we were conscious back then too, like we had the same brains. So we had to make a story of our existence. We had to tell ourselves a story about why we had to chase the animals, why we had to go hunting, right? And so I think that's sort of the beginning of a mythology, and our overarching sort of meaning is that our hunter-gatherer ancestors would have said, you know, we have to go out and hunt every day or forage. And again, they would see that going on in the environment around them. And then they would create, they were just part of this cycle, right? They were part of it. And that's the first myth that we probably have, is that we were active participants in this cycle that was going on everywhere around us, right? And I think that cyclical nature is really important for human meaning, which is something that we've gotten away from today too.
Right.
So that's the beginning of myth, right? And then I think once we turn to agriculture, the myths become, as I say in the book, become more verticalized, right? They become where we more have high gods and, you know, gods that have ultimate power. And then you come down to today, maybe, I don't know, maybe we lack any sort of metaphysical myths, at least in the mainstream culture. And that's part of the problem.
Right. Yeah. You know, it seems like we have too much freedom of thought, you know, as a result of the fact that we don't have to deal with survival. You, you talk about how instant gratification was very functional during the hunter-gatherer realms and almost didn't have any meaning because they just lived from day to day and they didn't really have, they didn't really ponder the meaning of life. The meaning of life was survival. And now we have so much freedom of thought because we don't have to deal with survival. And so instant gratification is now a problem. It never was a problem for the hunter-gatherers. They basically, that just was like built into the situation. So this gives us what you call a crisis of meaning. We seem to need meaning or the support of some kind of functional mythology more than our predecessors did. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it definitely does. And it's like, I think Viktor Frankl said that beyond survival, right, we need to find a reason for living, right? And this kind of speaks right into the whole evolutionary mismatch where we, back then, we didn't need to think too much about life, as you were saying, because our story was survival. But now we're beyond that. Like most of us in this world have no, you know, not any real sort of, you know, scarcity of, like, we can go to the grocery store, right? We don't need to think about where we're going to get our food. And so definitely we need, it becomes a problem now to figure out life, right? Yeah. And we definitely need a larger sort of reason for living. And that is the whole point of the book, right? Is what are we going to do with this? Like, it's a crisis, right?
Right. Yeah. It sort of reminds me of the dynamic of addiction. You know, it's sort of like, okay, an addictive substance or habit provides a little temporary relief, but then it exacts a cost of the hangover effect or whatever that makes it a bad deal. And it seems to me that having all of this freedom from survival, it seems like the people that of the hunter-gatherers were probably a lot happier than we are by not being so conflicted by so many choices.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have a choice. They just had to go with what was in front of them, survival, right? And now us today, we have so many choices that we don't know which one is going to lead to us feeling that sense of meaning, that sense of peace, which is ultimately, I think, what we're looking for. There's just too many of them, right?
And that's what you say explains bouts of anxiety, depression, insomnia, boredom, or feelings of emptiness, even though everything in our lives may seem fine on the surface. You know, this reminds me of what's happening in America. It's almost unbelievable that the wealthiest country on earth, the most privileged country on earth, the American economic empire, is so unhappy and so dissatisfied with their lot in life that it's just amazing to me how difficult it is for modern humans to find fulfillment or to be contented with what we have, you know. And I think it has to do with this existential paradox, which is fed by these problems that are so complicated, like climate change and the rise of fascism. You know, this seems like no meaning or purpose will provide a state of fullness that we seek. So then you go on in the book to make some recommendations based on different ways that this has been approached. Why don't you bring up that for us?
Yeah, and like, you know, I think, obviously, I don't have, like you said, that I don't have all the answers. This is just me sort of like coming up with ideas that could possibly work given our current situation. And one thing I keep going back to is Joseph Campbell, you know, the great mythologist, in his Heroes Monomyth story, he keeps talking about being the master of two worlds, right? And that's one of the last stages of his Heroes Monomyth. And to me, what that means is we need to be masters of both our sort of animal or reptilian side that seeks that instant gratification, that seeks that the pleasure and the security, but also be masters of the meaning side, the metaphysical side. Where do we fit in this crazy mysterious universe that we live in? And right. I think we need to bring those together, and that's what I've tried to have a beginning of, at least at the end of the book there.
Yeah, I love the way you analyze the problem, and it's so clear, and it puts things in perspective in how we are, you know, obsessed with pleasure and security, which was the driving motivators of the hunter-gatherers, but how that's not enough. We can't find fulfillment in that anymore. And in fact, we're kind of trapped in a situation where instant gratification doesn't even make sense because we're farmers. You know, you talk about the mentality of the farmer. It's not about instant gratification. It's waiting for the harvest and to see what happens. And that creates a whole different kind of uncertainty. It's not a day-to-day challenge. It's a bigger picture. If the harvest fails, we're screwed. You know, we've got to, you know, wait another year to see if the farm is going to survive. So we're so obsessed with pleasure and security, but we don't necessarily have a way to feel secure because of this delayed gratification, this forced delayed gratification. And so you're talking about what can we add to this seeking of pleasure and security, which we really can't get away from. It's just we're wired that way, or, you know, to a large extent. But you talk about going beyond that and talking about being in awe of the mystery. Now, this is a great concept, but I'm not sure what that's like on a day-to-day basis. Okay, I'm in awe of the mystery. What does that mean? Is that a particular kind of thinking, or is that a particular kind of feeling, or both?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, back to the master of two worlds. So the two halves are, yes, trying to experience and feeling like you're part of this mystery of the universe, right? Without jumping to absolutes. And the other half of that is, I believe that a great way to manage our sort of animal side is to bring Epicurean philosophy into our lives, which is the managing of, or the balancing of pleasure and pain. Now, with the awe side, you know, like, I think what it is that I think just waking up every day and remembering, and I do this not every day, but I do it, is just remembering, looking up at the sky and remembering that, like, wow, like, we're in this crazy planet that is in the middle of a completely unknown universe. And it's amazing and scary at the same time that we're here. And I think grounding yourself in that every day can really help us to make us feel, I guess, that we're part of something much bigger, right? Without actually having it become some sort of dogma to us. And I think that's the problem, you know, is that we seek that sort of metaphysical big picture story, but a lot of the time we bring it down to our sort of own rules and we make up our own rules about it. And that's when we get ourselves into trouble, right? And then we see somebody else has a different view. Well, if my system is the right system, then that system over there must be wrong. And what we end up doing is we start dehumanizing the other side. We start impugning them, treating them less than human, so that we prop up our own beliefs.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that this mystery and awe can like bring down a bit, is that just to realize that none of us, I don't think, have any idea what's going on.
Yeah, but we're not very comfortable. We're not very comfortable with that level of uncertainty. You know, we want answers. We want a fixed. So it's all or nothing thinking. You know, we want an absolute faith that, you know, we believe in, or else we can go the other way to the other extreme, which is nihilism, which is like hopeless believing in nothing. And you talk about how Kirk Schneider, the existentialist, advised an enchanted agnostic disposition toward the mystery of the universe. Boy, I tell you, that I think is a hard formula for most people, because we've been brought up to think in black and white terms about right and wrong and this polarized approach to truth. You know, and Albert Camus, you mentioned him. And he says, we can avoid returning to absolutes, yet keep the mystical close to our hearts by becoming what he calls metaphysical rebels. What an interesting term that is. He says that's living the absurd life. Consciously living the absurd life is a way of life that embodies the mystery of being. This is a quote from your book. Wow. How well are you doing with...
For sure. Yeah.
So Epicurean, you get into Epicureanism too, which is sort of a balanced approach to pleasure and pain. And what are the recommendations of Epicurus?
Well, I mean, I think it comes down to really becoming self-aware of, you know, what choices and avoidance, what you choose and avoid to sort of work towards that pleasure in your life. And so, I mean, I think on a day-to-day basis, most of us are still, you know, we are still guiding our lives by pleasure and pain, whether we think so or not, right? Everything is ultimately, I think we're trying to get to a place where, you know, we feel excited, we feel at peace, right? I think every decision we make is around that. And Epicurus does give us a formula for that. It's not fully fleshed out. It's something I'm trying to do now, is to have a better system for that. But he does tell us that he differentiates between, you know, vain desires and, I'm going to say, sustainable desires, right? And the vain desires, or corrosive desires, they're sometimes called, these are things like, you know, power, fame, like great riches, these types of things. While it seems like it to us that they're good and they give us pleasure and peace, in the end, they're actually far more destructive, not only to ourselves, but to others as well. And so he advocates for sustainable pleasures, right? So asking ourselves, okay, well, you know, we can go and buy this Tesla or this whatever, but how much pleasure, how much positive emotion is that going to give us versus how much pain is that going to give us? Like, how much do we have to work at our 9-to-5 jobs to be able to afford that Tesla, right? And so that formula is balancing that. So that's balancing our animal side, right?
Yeah. And you make the point in the book, and I'm going to quote you, even if we eventually become gods who can experience any pleasure and power that we want, we will still need to find something worthwhile to do. And that's not necessarily getting a job that makes the most money so that we can gratify these various materialistic and sensual wants. We still need to find something worthwhile to do. Wow. Most people don't have the freedom to make a choice like that. They need their day job in order to pay the rent, in order to survival. So I suppose the advice would be to add to that some kind of mystical consciousness of supporting the awe factor so that we can have a greater sense of meaning in spite of the fact that we have to accommodate our animal needs.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that there's any right way to live. I mean, I know most of us have to work our 9-to-5 jobs. And so I think whatever we can do to bring on to our life, bring that mystery, remind ourselves that we are in this very mysterious place. None of us really know what's going on, right? As much as we might want to think we do. And then also, you know, using the Epicurean side to help balance out our desires and our wants so that we can have a bit more pleasure, not so much discomfort and maybe overwork in our lives.
Now, you say towards the end of the book, it is existential paradox itself that gives us our purpose and a fighting chance for a meaningful existence. Now, I think what you mean by that is the acceptance of the existential paradox and being aware of it and dealing with it. Is that right?
Yeah. So I think it's a couple of things. I think it's also the fact that I think no matter what, you know, I talk at the beginning of the book about how the whole metaphysical force of the universe seems to be movement, right? And that everything is constantly in flux and change. And, you know, that's part of so many religions and philosophies. And I think part of the existential paradox, that is actually what's propelling us and moving us forward, is that there's always going to be this gap between what we have and what we can imagine, right? Yeah. And that is propelling us forward all the time, right? And yeah.
Beautifully put. And I'm afraid we've run out of time, even though there's so much more we could explore. What an incredible conversation that we could have or could continue to have. But I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is www.coldnoodlecreative.com. It's all one word, coldnoodlecreative.com. Now, for those who may be listening to Pathways Live on a Sunday morning and have tuned into the show late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, producer of the Visionary I Ching Oracle, an app that supports great decisions and perfect timing. And we're so glad you are with us today and have the ability to review all of the hundreds of interviews in our online archive. Also, you can play and or share this particular program with Mark Hawkins whenever you want, via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Dr. Mark Hawkins, author of The Mismatched Human, our fight for a meaningful existence. And I can hardly think of a more pertinent book that you might want to read. And I want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of you listeners for tuning in to Pathways, which is currently broadcast on KBOO.FM in Portland, Oregon. Or perhaps you have a free subscription to our podcast, which you can find at divination.com. That's divination.com, or by searching for Pathways Radio on Paulo's YouTube channel, where you can also give us a thumbs up and subscribe. And do feel free to forward a link to your friends. So this is Paulo bidding you adieu and reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Podcasts. And thanks again to Dr. Mark Hawkins and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways Conversation.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Urban League of Portland, celebrating its 80th anniversary as a local civil rights organization.